Thank you everyone for joining today. Let's get started with the audio portion of our program. Next slide, please. Today we are going to take you back one slide, please, on an application walkthrough for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. My name is Carlene Velez, and I am a Fulbright Outreach and Recruitment Specialist, and I'm joined with my colleague Catherine Motto, who is the Application and Selection Lead for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. We're excited to be working with you today, and after our presentation, we will have time for questions and answers. So throughout the presentation, please feel free to put any of those questions in the question box, and we will get to the questions, or as many as we can, in the time allotted. Next slide, please. Just to get started, we always like to review the basic eligibility for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. You'll see this on the application as well, but just to review it right here. First and foremost, to be eligible for the U.S. Scholar Program, you do need to have U.S. citizenship. If you do not have U.S. citizenship, you may be eligible for the Foreign Scholar Program, and you can check with the Fulbright Commission or Embassy in your home country. Other than that, the eligibility depends on the award to which you are applying. Some require a PhD or a terminal degree, others a master's degree, and still others require professional or teaching experience. So please do refer to the award description for the most up-to-date list of requirements for that particular award. You also need to comply with the policies of the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board and the waiting period in between grants. Next. For the application, you need the following components. So first, you need to fill out the application form, and that is what we will be reviewing today. So today, you'll get to see some of the ins and outs of the application form so that you know what to expect. Next, you need the project statement, which is a 3- to 5-page summary of the project that you're doing. Just to remind you, the Fulbright program is the U.S. Department of State's flagship international and educational exchange program, and as such, the essence of the program, or the exchange nature of the program, that is designed to improve scholarship, to promote mutual understanding, and improve lives around the world, those ideas should come through in that 3- to 5-page project statement. Additionally, you'll need a CV or a resume. You will need 2 letters of recommendation, and you'll see today how to register your recommenders in our online application system. You may need a language proficiency report if it's required, and also a letter of invitation if it's required. Other than that, you need some supplemental materials. If you are applying for a teaching award, you'll need course outlines or syllabi. And remember, those do not need to be created from scratch. You can utilize some examples of courses that you are currently teaching that are very successful. You need a select bibliography for the research awards of up to 3 pages that situates your work or your research project in the literature. And if you are applying for a teaching research combination award, you would need both the syllabi and the bibliography. And then finally, for artists, architects, and journalists, and creative writers, you are allowed a portfolio submission, and the guidelines can be found on our website. Next. Okay, from here, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Catherine, who will talk a little bit about the application resources that you can use and dive right into the application walkthrough.
Okay, thanks everyone. Carlene, we had a question come in about the time that needs to elapse from one Fulbright to a next, and I just wanted to highlight this for anyone else who maybe was wondering about that. So it's 2 years from the grant end date of the last Fulbright until you can apply again. So that means 2 years. So if your grant ended in June 2018, the next that you could submit an application would be July 2020. And so that we just wanted to clarify before we got too far. I know it comes up occasionally. In terms of the other guidelines for our eligibility and the resources and everything, this slide is well timed for questions about that we will not only be posting a recording of this webinar on the website in the coming days, but we also have lots of materials, or rather resources, on our website to help you prepare that application. So we have more information about the page limits and such of the different materials, the bibliography and the CV and all of that, as well as the different talking points or guidelines that we have for each of those components. So we have the instructions themselves. We have a PDF walkthrough guide of walking you through all the questions, or at least the key parts of the application that we see commonly missed, or people have questions about, that are very helpful for applicants as well. So you could have them printed out as a resource for you as you're working on the actual application. Let's see. So let's go ahead. We'll have more webinars coming over the coming weeks, as I'm sure you were able to register for this webinar, or if you're listening to it after, just keep an eye on that schedule of webinars online. It's a really terrific resource for you with lots of great information about the program, and then you also have webinars like this one that help you actually prepare your application. So before I proceed to the application, I did want to quickly navigate to the catalog of awards, and I happen to have that already up on my screen ready for you. So you can see really how to navigate to the application from here. So for instance, if I were looking to apply to go to Cambodia, you can search on awards, and you can see the awards for Cambodia. And you click on the award for Cambodia, you look at all of the different information here, the award details, all of the different pieces of information here in these award descriptions are really important to pay attention to. The grant activity, the grant length, whether or not FLEX is available, whether or not you can split that grant up into a couple of segments. The locations, the award requirements are also important to pay attention to. We try to keep these as streamlined as possible to give you the most important information that you really need to know in order to decide if this is an appropriate award, if you're qualified for this award, and if it's a good fit for what you're looking to do. So I just wanted to take that moment to remind you of this or introduce it to you if you hadn't spent a lot of time on the awards catalog previously. So then what you can do is click on that button that says Begin Application Process. That will take you to our website, our program website for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. And then you can click on Application. I already have an application open. It's a test application that I'm using to show you all today. So I've already logged in. But what you'll need to do if you're starting an application is start a new application. The application itself will walk you through the steps. You'll need to create an application account. You'll want to use an email account that you check regularly and that you'll be able to access throughout the next year. So that email address that you use as your login is also the one that we'll be using for system-generated emails, updates, and importantly, we'll be using that to send you notifications about your application status. And I'm sure you won't want to miss those, so just make sure it's an email that you're going to have access to and be checking. So once you enter that basic information, you'll get an email with a PIN. You'll use that to basically confirm your account information, and then you'll be able to start your application. Now, as I said, as you can see, I've created an account already and have logged in, so we can go ahead and get started. Now, you may notice that I'm using Internet Explorer, which is fine. Sometimes we get questions about which browser you should use. We do encourage you to use Google Chrome, but as you can see, I'm using a different browser, and it seems to be fine so far. You can work on it, on the application itself, over a number of days. Your entries should automatically save as you proceed through it. But I do want to note that regardless of what browser you use, we ask that you make sure that you have the application open only in one tab in your browser. So if you're like me and you have 75 different tabs open, just make sure that the application is only in one of them. It can wreak havoc on your application if you have it open in a couple of tabs, and you don't want that, so just make sure it's only in one. The application hopefully will be pretty intuitive to use. We've kept working on it to improve it and to make sure that the instructions and the guidelines and everything are clear. Again, we do have that PDF. We obviously have this recording today that will hopefully answer many of your questions. If you had applied previously, right, so you can see on my screen that I have an application here from last year. So when we start the application, you'll be able to see some of what's already pre-populated. So the application contains some fields that you're required to complete. We've identified those fields with an asterisk. If they're not completed, you'll be reminded to do so before you actually submit the application. There are text boxes where you'll need to be mindful of character limits, and for any of your document uploads, you'll want to be mindful of the page limits and other formatting and content guidelines. You'll also find for text boxes there may be character limits, and characters include letters, numbers, punctuation, and spaces. So you may want to do that drafting in Microsoft Word or another, you know, place where you can do a character count. It's not a word count. And you just, you know, check it when you, after you've copied and pasted it into the box, just to make sure everything has pasted fine. Okay, so let's get going. I'm excited. Okay, so create new application, yes. Open application. Okay, so I have a new application. So you will read all of the information on this page. I won't read it to you, but you will read all of that and make sure that you are aware of what is on this page. A lot of it I've already explained to you. One thing I will highlight is this timeout. So a session will time out after 60 minutes of inactivity, which is a good chunk of time, but you do want to be aware of that, especially if you're going between drafting something in Word and working in the application itself. So just be mindful of that. So you can go ahead and hit continue on the next page. Now there are only a couple of items over here on the menu bar, and I'll explain a little bit more about that in just a minute. So we have some initial questions that are asking you about whether you've had a prior grant, whether you're a U.S. citizen or not. So if you're not a U.S. citizen, you will not be able to proceed in the application because, as Carlene explained, you have to hold U.S. citizenship in order to be eligible. You can hold dual citizenship in most cases. There are a few countries where being a dual citizen would be a barrier to applying, so just take a quick peek at that word description. Again, there's not many of them. I think it's less than a dozen countries where you would not be able to apply. Australia comes to mind, where you couldn't be a dual citizen of Australia and the U.S. and be applying for the Fulbright program to Australia. Now, if you were a dual citizen with Australia and you wanted to go to Brazil, that's a whole different ballgame, and that would be fine. And then you select the program that you're applying to. So in this case, we are looking at the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, but you may also be looking at the Public Policy Fellowship or the Arctic Initiative, in which case you would select the appropriate one of these programs. The International Education Administrator Awards, we had a separate IEA application walkthrough recently. So if you're looking at that program, you're also welcome to find that recording and access that. So are you applying to an award that allows for grant activities in multiple countries? Well, gee, that's a great question. You know, I was initially looking at that award in Cambodia, so let's actually say no. I'm not going to, I want to just go and do the work in Cambodia.
And okay, well, continue. This second, because on that prior, we've had a couple questions about the Global Scholar Award. So if you are applying for the Global Scholar or any other award that does require you to visit multiple countries, you would just select yes in that box that Catherine just indicated.
Yeah, so actually, you know, that's a great, that's super. So using the Cambodia example, and then I'll come back and explain this a little bit more. So I can actually use my keyboard to go down to find Cambodia here, and then I can make this screen bigger. Thank you for asking. And then I can select the award, and in this case, Cambodia only has the one award available. And so I'm able to select that. And then you can see, okay, so Cambodia, this award, and then this is the information for this award, right? So it's only for teaching and research. English is sufficient. Flex is not available. I start thinking about it and mulling it over and say, you know what, actually, I really want to do the ASEAN research program instead. So I go back to this page here. I click on yes. And see, this is hyperlinked, so you can actually even just go to the catalog of awards to see all the awards that are open that would be included here. So if I wanted to do the ASEAN research program, I would need to change the award here to ASEAN, click save, and then here is where I would enter countries. So maybe I still want to go to Cambodia, so I could enter Cambodia here, and maybe I also want to go to Malaysia, so I would enter that country here. And so for, if you were doing the opposite, so if you were doing, if you were initially looking at a multi-country award and then decided, you know what, I really only want to go to Cambodia, for this award, for example, you would do basically what I just did, but the opposite. So just make sure to go back to that preliminary question and switch your answer, and then make sure to check your award or your country and your award. Okay, so we continue on with the application. And then it's entering a lot of basic information here for you. You can, as I mentioned at the beginning, we have a, I had worked on this application last year, so you can see where some of my answers are still here waiting for me. A lot of these things haven't changed, so I'm not going to change any of these, but you can see as I walk through this initial page of personal information, these responses will be here for me to update if I need to. So I go ahead and continue. You can jump around, so it may be that you, you know, jump from country right into award details or, you know, to some other page, and that's fine. You'll just want to make sure that all of the pages are complete ultimately when you get done. So for the next page here, we have our contact information, and you'll find that address sections and in many parts of the application start with the country first. And this is so that the rest of the fields related to the address can be updated, right? So for country United States, then the states will all appear appropriately. So if it seems weird that the country is listed first, there is a reason for that. So you're able to enter that information. If your current mailing address is not the same as your permanent address, you can enter that here, and you can enter that next address in the dates of validity, and then indicate if you plan to resume residence in the U.S. following that Fulbright. Telephone numbers, email address, emergency contact information, and then continuing on. Moving on to the academic and professional information, this is where you'll enter information about your employment, your degrees, experience abroad, and so on. I want to highlight here the current academic and professional title. This list is really long. It actually was longer, if you can believe it, and we've tried to simplify it, but do please take a minute and search through to see if there's something that's closest to your title. It may not be a perfect match, but we would expect that perfect listing, that accurate listing of your professional title to be in your CV or resume. And you can also select other if it really isn't there, enter the other information, and then you enter your institution. So say you are at University of Maryland, not too far here from our office here in Washington, D.C. So say I'm at University of Maryland College Park. You can see that I was typing this in, and it was recognizing, and I could search or use my mouse rather to select the one that was the right institution name. If your institution or employer isn't on this list, you can go ahead and type it in. I know I tend to type fast, and sometimes I don't type letters in the right order, so just double check that it's not your spelling, like it might be for me, and to make sure that you've got the right institution here. So if you have multiple institutions, I would put one in this box and then put your primary in this box, or pick one if you don't have a primary, that's understandable, and make sure that both of them are clearly listed, or if there's more than two, you know, make sure all of them are clearly listed in your CV or your resume, just so that those looking at your application are able to kind of understand. We will be posting a link to the application. It's also available from the U.S. Scholar Program website. So if you're trying to navigate to this right now, you could go to cis.org. Seeing the questions. So if you go to cis.org and then go to the U.S. Scholar Program and then to the application page, there's an application tab where you're able to navigate to that. So let me switch back to the application. You'll go ahead and complete the rest of this page. You'll upload your CV. So if you need to upload a document, as you do here for this CV, you're able to upload it here. So you can upload it. I had a test document already ready. Sorry if that was too fast. We'll have another one where I can practice for you. So you're able to click here to visit our website for the content requirements. We will be continuing on down the page. We have your academic history. Here you'll enter your prior degrees. And so here's where you would enter your, as I said, prior degree. So the institution is what you would start with. So Marymount University. Let's go there. And then let's see, Arlington, Virginia. There we go, level of study. So you would just go ahead and complete these fields. I'm not going to complete all of these for you, for all of the possible different degrees, but you'll be able to see what this looks like. Arts, June, that looks good. Not in progress, save. Okay, so you would not enter study abroad programs. You would just enter the actual degrees here, the degrees that are either in progress or conferred, and you can see that that's here. You'll have an option to indicate if you're a postdoctoral applicant, so if you are within the last 5 years, or you know, if you received your doctorate in the last 5 years, you would answer yes or no, depending on your situation. And then accomplishments. So this box is one of our wonderful text boxes where you're able to enter your 5 most significant professional accomplishments. And here you do, again, want to be aware of that character limit. So 700 characters, and you do have a calculator here. So you can be working in Word to be able to do this. And then copy your text into the box. So if I, for example, just copied this in, it'll show how many characters left that I have. Okay, experience abroad. So if you have experience abroad, you would click yes. And the key reason that we ask about this is regarding eligibility, actually. So candidates who've resided abroad for 5 or more consecutive years in this 6-year period preceding the date of application are ineligible. So you just want to be mindful of that as you're working on the application. For most applicants, this isn't an issue, but you'll want to make sure that this section is completed. So it's not so much repeating what's in the resume or the CV, but making what is in the resume and putting it into this section if it's appropriate, we would expect to see that here. Plus, actually, then you can take it out of your resume depending on you know, how you formatted your resume or your CV, that could actually save you some space later. Previous Fulbright grants. So if you've had a prior Fulbright grant, you would click yes appropriately to these questions, and then you would be able to enter that prior grant. So if it was a Fulbright U.S. Scholar grant, maybe it was in 2013 to Belgium, and then you can enter that here. Okay, so I'm going to take a quick look at some of the questions that have come in. Experience abroad, that does include work experience, academic studies, personal experience, if it's been, if there's anything 3 consecutive months or longer in the last 6 years, we would ask that you enter that here. It doesn't matter what kind of experience abroad it is. It could be volunteer experience, any kind of residence or travel abroad that's 3 consecutive months or longer. The other side of that, too, is if you spend a lot of your year abroad and cumulatively over that year, you would be over 3 months or longer. We would ask that you put that in here as well. In terms of suggestions for the accomplishments, Carlene, do you have any suggestions here? So this would include, generally say it includes honors, awards, publications, exhibitions. It really depends on the person.
Yeah, I agree. It would be things, for example, any type of faculty grants or awards, any type of distinguished teaching awards that you have received. Those also fall into accomplishments. It might be large grants that you received from other granting organizations that could be considered an accomplishment.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so if you have had a prior Fulbright Scholar grant, going back to that, our last question on this page, you would enter a justification, compelling reasons for being awarded an additional Fulbright Scholar grant. Okay, so moving on to the award details page.
Catherine, I want to about the justification for the Fulbright. There was a question that came in about whether you will be at a disadvantage if you had a past Fulbright award. So I do want to underscore the fact that the justification really is important, because there are some scholars who received a Fulbright award but might be extending their academic work to another country or might be continuing on in their project but taking it in a different direction, and those would be appropriate justifications that you could provide as far as why you are applying for another Fulbright award.
Yeah, and I don't think it's limited to those reasons for justifications either. In terms of that prior Fulbright, we definitely see people who have had a Fulbright and are applying to receive another, and they're successful. And there's a number of different reasons that can be. It can be that they're doing longitudinal research, and it's been a number of years, and it's a good time to, pick up and do that second leg of research, or it may be extending it to a different country, or, someone had proposed conducted research previously, and they're now doing a teaching-focused project. I mean, there's many different reasons. I think the key thing is to explain briefly what those reasons are and, what may be different what the outcomes would be and what they were from the prior grant. And the other piece of it is, regardless of the reason, there is a preference given to those who haven't had prior Fulbrights. Now, that isn't to say that if you have had one previously, you couldn't get another. It's not a disqualifying factor, but it is something to bear in mind as you proceed through the application process. Okay, so award details is where we left off. So the academic discipline is the discipline or the field where your proposed project really sits. If it's an interdisciplinary project, we ask that you pick the one that fits the best or most closely, and then you would pick the associated specialization here from this box. And then you have a text box where you can add additional information. And this can, again, be really helpful for those that are interdisciplinary in nature. Both of these discipline and specialization drop-downs are pretty lengthy. So, again, take a scan once, if not twice, through before selecting one to help make sure that you've got the right one. There's questions about the activity. Most importantly, we have the type of activity. Now, the award that I had chosen initially was only available for research. So you'll be, depending on the award, if this award were open to other activities, you would have choices here. And you would choose the one that's most appropriate for what you're proposing. The options being research, teaching, professional project, or some combination of those. Now, I do want to note if the option isn't here, you can't make it an option, right? So for Cambodia, for this award, it's or rather for this ASEAN award that I had selected, it's only for research. So I can't make up a teaching-only grant for this particular program. So just bear that in mind as you're thinking about what award might be a good fit for you. You'll also enter the grant period start date. When you plan to start that grant, you'll want to check the award description to make sure that what you're proposing is in line with what is available in the award description, and same with the grant length, and that would be in months. On the project title and the project abstract, again, should be fairly intuitive in terms of what needs to go there. I do ask you to be mindful of those character limits and just to make sure that once you paste everything in, if you're pasting it in, to just scroll to the very end of what you've entered to make sure it's all there and not cut off. Okay, host institution. I know we had a few folks who had questions about host institutions. A host institution would serve to host you in that host country. Not all awards and programs require a host institution to be named in the application, so you'll want to look at the award description for that information. Some awards have specific hosts that are eligible, or even just one host that is eligible, so you'll want to be mindful of that. So preferred host institution, and again, here I'm typing in and it's allowing me to choose the options from the box. Now you can, depending on the award, so for this award, it's a multi-country award, so I'm choosing, I need to choose a host in the second country that I'm proposing. Again, spelling matters, as you're seeing if you're watching this. So let's see. Okay, so we will see. Okay, so it's asking me for more information. That's good error checking, right? Okay, so you would enter the city and the region and any additional comments if you need to. In other words, you would complete this more completely than I am, just for showing you, right? Okay, so scrolling on down, we have the institution name. We've added that, so we have both institutions listed. In the case of the invitation letter, an invitation is preferred for this award, so if I had an invitation, I would put that here. So you just go to Browse and upload an invitation letter and click on Upload. Now, if you had multiple invitations, you would need to merge all of those into one document to be able to upload them as a single unified document. Let me actually go ahead and put this in. Okay, so where do we leave off? We left off with the invitation letters, ethical requirements. You'll want to read that. And then alternate countries and awards. If you're willing to be considered for other awards, you can indicate that here. I do want to highlight that this is very, very infrequently used. So You'll want to, you don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about what other countries and awards you would be entering here. You really want to focus your time and your energy on the actual application and tailoring your materials to the country or countries that you're applying to for the award that you've selected. So continuing on, the project documents page. This is a little bit new this year. In this section, we have a series of text boxes that are addressing several questions that we previously asked you to address in the project statement. You can also find these prompts for this section on the US Scholar page on our website. It is on the application tab. You can click on the project statement section and you'll find them at the bottom of that resulting page. We do recommend, again, drafting that response in a Word document. 1,000 characters does get a little bit long for a text box of this size. You it may be easier to review and revise as such in a separate format and then copy and paste it into the application. Just, again, be mindful of those character limits. So you can see what those questions are in the application and on our website, but they're really looking for the why Fulbright, why this particular country, and some of those personal qualities, like your ability to be adaptable, culturally sensitive, and collegial, and so on. All important qualities for being a Fulbrighter. So the project statement, this is where you upload that document. This does have a page limit of 3 to 5 pages. And you'll want to upload that here in this section. Now, if I used a document that's too long, I purposely chose one that was too long from my test document. So if I scroll down, it will show that it's 14 pages. Okay, so just remember that when we get further into the application, that we uploaded a project statement that was too long. Bibliography, again, you'll want to upload that document here. We have guidelines and content requirements on the website that you can refer to. And we will continue on to the language skills. Now, not all countries and awards require a foreign language. In fact, many don't require it, so we've tried to make this a little bit more clear in the application in terms of what is required and in terms of language level, the competency level, as well as what kind of documentation would be required. So for this particular award, English is sufficient, but we would need to make sure that the feasibility is demonstrated in the project statement. So the self-evaluation, there's two parts. There's a self-evaluation and then there's an external evaluation. And both of these are optional for this particular award. Now, it may be different for you in the award that you're choosing, so just be mindful and read carefully here. So here I could enter my language and my competency. I would complete these text boxes with my answers to these questions, and then I would continue on. You did maybe see how there's a drop down here, so you could enter multiple languages. So I think I had selected Cambodia and Malaysia, so if I also needed Arabic or something else, I would be able to enter that here as well. Okay, moving on to recommendations and language evaluation. So recommendations, I know Carlene had highlighted that all applications require 2 recommendations. Now in the language skills page just before this, if the award indicated that an external foreign language evaluation was needed, then this is the section where you would add that. So you would use this page to do both of these things in registering your recommenders and your language evaluators. So you start by clicking on that Add Recommender or Evaluator button. You want to make sure that you're clicking on the right type. Whether it's a recommendation letter or a foreign language evaluation does make a difference because it sends the recipient either a place to upload a letter of recommendation or a form to complete for a foreign language evaluation. So you'll want to complete this whole section. You're able to enter a personal message to the person to say, you know, dear so-and-so, this is the recommendation letter for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program that we had discussed recently. I hope you're able to complete your recommendation letter. It's due on this date or by this date. It's good to give them a heads up on when it's actually due. To make sure that they get that in on time. It is your responsibility to help them get it in on time to make sure that your application is complete on or before the deadline. So you can waive or not waive your right to the report after, and then you would type in your name. So I'm going to hit cancel there. But you do the same thing for the foreign language evaluation. So you can click there again and then switch types and then enter that information. Now,
Catherine, we have a question about a recommender.
Sure.
And one person was asking if they should choose the collaborator in the host country as a recommender.
I think it really depends on who you choose to serve as your recommenders. We do have some guidelines on our website about recommendation letters. You only have two, right? So you want to think about people who know you and your work really well. So it could be that this collaborator knows you and your work really well, but it may be that someone else or someone, multiple people, know you and your work maybe a little bit better. In which case, your collaborator would actually be really well served to provide an invitation letter. And that invitation letter, if it's not, you know, there are a few awards where it shouldn't be sought, in which case don't put an invitation letter in your application. But if it's in any of the other scenarios where it's required or it's optional or what have you, that collaborator could serve as as the person who's writing that invitation letter and could make that invitation letter in a lot of ways read very much as a recommendation letter, that they're able to explain more about the importance of the project and the fit of you as the applicant with the institution and so on, and to really kind of marry the two documents together, where they wouldn't serve as a recommender formally, but kind of more informally. I hope that helps to answer. Okay, so say, actually, let me go back to that page really quick. So say you have entered a recommender and you need to change something. So maybe, oh, you know what, they're using a new email address now, so I need to change that. So you would remove them as a recommender and re-add them as a recommender. So you would exclude them and then re-register them. Similarly, you can send a reminder to your recommenders in this section as well. You can also do that after you've submitted the application. The key thing is to make sure that your application and your recommendation letters are all submitted by that September 15th deadline. So you could submit your application tomorrow, and your recommenders would still need to submit their recommendation letters by September 15th. Conversely, you could, send your recommenders their emails to upload their letters, and they could do that tomorrow. And you may need to wait until closer to the deadline to actually submit. So the order in which you do that matters less than making sure that all of the pieces are there on the deadline. Okay, so data privacy and requests for consent. This section is hopefully pretty self-explanatory. You'll want to read this. We do very much take your privacy and your data very seriously and maintain systems and handle this very carefully. We obviously want to safeguard that information. Okay, so certification. We're getting close to the end, everyone. So this certification is something that you want to read carefully because you are signing your name effectively. You'll type your full legal name here in this box after reading it, but it's really ensuring and testifying that you have provided true, accurate, and complete information in your application. So once you have done that, you will be able to click confirm. So confirm. Now, you know that I left a lot of sections missing when we were walking through this. So you can see that there's a lot of field errors that are missing, or that, you know, fields that are missing and updated information that's needed and all of that. So this is a good example of an incomplete application, so I would not be able to submit this. I can save this for later, but I'll be able to go back and keep on working on this over the coming weeks leading up to the application deadline. It will show you the page that is needing your attention, so award details, I can click on that. It'll take me back to that page, and then I'll have to look through the page to see, okay, what was I missing? And in this case, let's see, I was missing a number of different questions, right? So you'll want to carefully read through these, enter whatever information is missing here. And really, before you submit, I would highly recommend taking one complete pass through all of the information just to make sure that what you've entered in your project statement and in the form here itself in terms of the start dates and the hosting institutions and all of that is consistent. That if you've indicated that you are doing Flex, if Flex was an option for this award, that the number of segments that you've selected for this is... Interruptions at home, sorry, folks. So you just want to make sure that everything is really consistent here with all of the different pieces of your application. So you want to think strategically in terms of these page limits and character limits, but still really connect the dots for reviewers so that they understand the point that you're trying to make without trying to guess that point themselves and maybe coming to the wrong conclusion. Without realizing it. So let's see, if we switch over to the app, back over to the PowerPoint for just a few minutes, we're almost done. I just wanted to walk you through the application cycle and then we'll get to as many of these questions as we can. But in terms of the application process and the whole review process, we do have this more fully explained on our website, but the deadline is September 15th. So we still have some time if you're listening to this as it's being recorded or, you know, over the summer. After that, we will conduct an initial, like a preliminary check of your application to make sure that it's complete and make sure that it's eligible. And after that, those eligible and complete applications will move on to our peer review process. And that peer review process takes place over the course of October and November, after which you'll be notified of the outcome of that review, whether your application has been recommended or not recommended for further consideration. Those applications that are not recommended stop at that point. Those applications that are recommended for further review are then reviewed by the host country or countries, depending on the award, by the U.S. Department of State and the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. Now we have to have all three of those outcomes before we can notify you of the final outcome, right? So if your application was recommended and then it goes to the host country and to the State Department and to the board for them to review, we have to have all of those decisions before we can notify you of that final decision. Which it says on the screen January to June. I will say that a lot of the decisions are on the earlier side of that, but we definitely are still seeing some selections that are still in process that haven't been finalized yet. And it is, if you're hearing this live, it is May, I think. but yeah, I mean, June is very much like kind of like the latest point where we would be receiving final confirmations and everything of that and notifying you. We do work to notify you as quickly as we can after deadlines or after everything is, after we have all of those confirmations and approvals and everything, so that you have a response as promptly as possible within that. And then after that, it's getting ready to go on your grant if you've been selected for an award. So that is the process and the application in a nutshell. We do have that PDF walkthrough, so if I was talking too fast, I apologize. You're welcome to access this again and again. You could also use it to put yourself to sleep at night. That's also okay. But you'll have that PDF as well that's easy to access. So, Carlene, I turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. I'm just going through all of the questions. All of you have been writing in with really wonderful questions. I've been doing my best to answer them as we go along.
Carlene, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. But there is a question about time abroad. So if you live in the mainland USA and you spend time in Puerto Rico, is that considered time abroad?
I don't believe so. I mean, Puerto Rico is part of the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, we've had scholars from Puerto Rico as U.S. scholars go elsewhere. So, yeah, it couldn't possibly.
Okay. So if you are listening and you're from Puerto Rico as well, please reach out. And
Guam, too, for that matter. I mean, there's other territories that, you know, yes.
Okay, then there's another question about, is it okay to include figures in the project statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we see part of the reason that we don't have, like, really lengthy examples of project statements is because the format and the content are going to vary so much across the different fields, across, you know, different people, of course, and across different projects. So, you know, it might be appropriate for you to include a picture or to include, you know, tables or, you know, equations. I mean, it's just totally going to depend. And that reminds me that I completely forgot to show you the page for those in the arts. So there is a section of the application where there's a portfolio upload where you're able to upload those materials into the application. But that is very much like the other pages in the application. So if you are in the arts or other creative fields, you would select that discipline and then that page would appear in the application.
All right, thank you very much. I have another question about, is there any flexibility in the project start date and length? If it is awarded, are we obligated to start when we proposed?
That depends, partly on the award itself. I mean, if the award, so, for example, Australia, all of their awards start in, like, early in the next spring. So in this, you know, the upcoming year, it would be early in 2021. So there's not a lot of flexibility. I think the awards might check the award for sure, but if the award says, like, February, then the preference would be to start in February, and there may be even an explanation as to why. But beyond that, if there's other reasons that, you know, the research that you're doing really needs to be done in the fall in Australia, then, you know, contact us and see if there might be any flexibility in terms of that. But generally speaking, there's usually a reason for the grant dates having a specific month or couple of, you know, range of months to start in.
The one thing I would like to add to that, the exception that I have seen the most is when you are studying something that depends on a particular season. So, for example, you might be studying a particular life cycle of an insect that is present in that particular country. If that is the reason that you're proposing a different start date, then you can reach out and try to get permission to move forward with that. But that is usually the most common award that or modification that I've seen, just to let most people know that awards generally are not offered during the summer unless it falls within the academic year of the country to which you are applying. And so just keeping that in mind, that if a summer award is something that you're hoping to find, those are usually the exception and not the norm. So you do want to look at ways of fitting this into an academic year so that you can engage with your hosts abroad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ultimate answer to so many of the questions that we see is it depends, right? So there's a lot of what ifs, and there's a lot of different circumstances that go into many of the questions that we receive, because each country is going to be a little bit different. Seasonality absolutely is a big piece of that. And thinking about your project itself, thinking about the feasibility, speaks directly to that. And if weather changes, if you're looking to go to the Himalayas and they are, any of the passes that you need to access are completely covered in snow and you can't access the places that you need to go to, what does that mean for your project? How can you adapt it? So that goes back to those adaptability and flexibility qualities.
All right, thank you. Here's one more question, Catherine. Are people able to provide more than two letters of recommendation?
No. That is one area where there is not flexibility. It is a limit of two. It's also a minimum of two.
Okay, thank you. And then another one about language proficiency requirements. Do they need to meet those language proficiency requirements prior to application submission or prior to departing if they are awarded a grant?
Well, that's a great question. And again, I'm going to use that favorite answer, it depends. And it depends a lot on the nature of what you're proposing to do. I think it also depends on how you present it. Even in places where language proficiency is required, there are instances where working with translators, working with graduate assistants to help with translation can make all the difference in the world. The key, I think, there is to present your plan and to explain it and to connect the dots for the reviewers and to make sure, check yourself and make sure that it's realistic and feasible for you also to come up to speed sufficiently on a particular language by the time that you would need it.
All right, thank you very much. We're having a lot of questions about time abroad, like if people went abroad for 2 weeks on a trip or they went 2 weeks to one country and 2 weeks to another country, it totaled 1 month, but it wasn't one consecutive trip. How do they log that in time abroad?
I wouldn't honestly worry about it if it's just like one trip here, one trip there. As long as it's not like cumulatively over 3 months over the course of a year.
Okay, thank you very much. I actually was saying that they should log anything 1 month or over, but is that incorrect? Should it be 3 months or over?
It depends. There's no harm in including more information in that section. That if it's a month, if it's 3 months, I think just so long as it's clear what that travel was and what that time abroad was, what we're really trying to make sure is we want to make sure that you're eligible. And you also obviously are thinking about, am I eligible? So just making sure that that's clear.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we are at the end of our time. I see 4:59, and so I do want to stress before we get off the line, if for some reason we were unable to answer your question, I would like to encourage you to reach out to the Fulbright Outreach and Recruitment lead whose name is listed on the award description of the award that you're considering. If you are on this webinar and you still have no idea which award might be the best for you and you need some help, I would encourage you to visit Office Hours. On every single award description, if you go to the bottom right corner of the award description, it says Join an Office Hour. And we do have these Office Hours listed by region, and we have the regional experts there. So feel free to join an Office Hour. If we were unable to answer your question, come and ask it then. If you have eligibility questions or application questions, again, come and ask it at that point. We are here to work with you to help you find the best award possible.
Yeah, these Office Hours, Carlene, that's great. That's new this year, and I'm really happy to see that. So please take advantage. Also, as I'm sure you advise your students, read what's on the website first and see if that answers. your questions. I'm sure, you know, I know many of our applicants are faculty, and we always stress, you know, read the syllabus. Well, you know, check the website. Sometimes things, you know, you still might have a question, and that's totally fine. Or something, you know, you might just not know quite where to find that information, and that's also fine. So just by all means, yeah, feel free to reach out. We want you to be a successful applicant in this process. So the more that we can make things clear and helpful for you, we will do our best in that process.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you again for joining us today. I hope you all have a wonderful day and stay safe and stay healthy.
Yep. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
Best of luck. Goodbye.